This is the Epilogue Audio Experience.
Welcome to the Passion People Podcast, and this is your host, Naga. A Passion People Podcast is a podcast about inspiring people to live a passionate life, to chase their dreams, to find ways to express themselves, and find new outlets and avenues to express their craft, break their inertia, and break through the barriers inside their heads and those around them. You're listening to Season 2, Episode 14. For this extremely special episode of the Passion People Podcast, for the first time ever, I've done a remote interview with the Amazon best-selling Commonwealth Short Story Prize winning writer, winner of the DWL Story Prize, nominated for the Pushcart Prize in Poetry, writer, producer, and narrator of acclaimed Indian podcast, Indian Noir. I'm talking to Nikesh Murali on his story, his journey, and his passion. And what is so exciting about today's episode is that he's made a special Lovecraftian horror story, especially for you folks, our listeners. And I'm really excited to share it with you. I hope you enjoy listening to the podcast. And we always love hearing feedback from our listeners. If you like what you hear, do drop us a mention on your favorite social media platforms, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. And also tell one other person about the podcast, because it goes a long way in spreading the word and helping other people find and explore this medium. On with the show. Nikesh, thank you so much for making it, for agreeing to be on the Passion People Podcast. So Nikesh, do you want to do like a quick intro about yourself?
Absolutely. Look, I'm excited to be on the podcast because I'm a fan of Passion People Podcast. And I've spoken to you many times before about why that is the case. I'm a firm believer in the principle that, you know, people should live their life passionately, find something that they're really passionate about and throw themselves at it, even if that means they have to work a day job and they have to spend the entire weekend editing podcasts like most of us do. So it's just inspiring to hear people on your podcast, and I am so thrilled that I'm one of the people on there. In terms of a bit of an intro, as you mentioned, Naga, I write, narrate, and I produce Indian Noir. Indian Noir is a podcast that features audio fiction stories in the crime and horror genre. The speciality of Indian Noir is that they are stories set in India with Indian characters. So if you are an Indian and you've woken up and trawled through Netflix and HBO and any of the many million cable channels we've got over there and, you know, thought, oh, geez, I wish there was that show that was done differently, that is befitting of our milieu, of our background, of the things that I see around in our society, be it in horror or crime, Indian Noir tries to deliver those stories to you.
Got it. So is it safe to say that storytelling is your passion, or terrifying people is your passion?
I wouldn't say that terrifying people is my passion. I am passionate about storytelling, and sometimes telling a good story and eliciting emotion and invoking thought involves disgusting people or terrifying people. And that's just a medium to engage with them and try and tell a good story. But yes, my passion is storytelling.
Talk to us a little bit about why you connect to the genre.
Yeah, look, that's a great question. So I think the question would be why I connect to the genres, because Indian Noir covers both crime and horror.
Right.
And to speak first about crime, I think I actually think that crime and horror are the two greatest genres in fiction. And the reason why I say that is with respect to crime, it gives you a wonderful lens to analyze our society, the evils in a society, the positives in a society, and how all of that really affects and controls the life of human beings therein. In a crime show, there is always a death, there is always a murder that is being investigated, but the story generally tends to be about the detective and their lives, the lives of the poor murder victim and their family, and the social milieu that it's set in. So it's a great lens to look at society. And horror is a great genre because while crime is looking at the macrocosm, the wider society and the role of the individual within it, horror looks at the individual's existentialist crisis. And by that, what I mean is you and I know at some level that we will all meet a horrible end. We will die of some kind of disease. We might die in a car crash. You know, we will lose people along the way as we age. Lots of terrible things will happen to us, but we don't mull over this. We just go on with our day-to-day lives. Horror gives you that window to examine the terror that we face on a day-to-day basis, but we hide away in our subconscious, and that which we worry about, that's set in the future. It lets you look at that terror, experience it, and then find some kind of cathartic pleasure from going through that experience. You're able to process the emotions and be able to resolve anything in your subconscious that's been worrying you or haunting you. So these are the reasons why crime and horror are my passion and why they are the focus of Indian Noir.
Wow, that's so deep. You know, because the first thing that came to my mind, right? Whenever I've been terrified or whenever I've been watching a horror movie, the first thing that always comes to my mind is that what kind of crazy person wants to scare your pants off? Like, what are they trying to achieve? Right? After talking to you, it's so evident that, you know, there's a deeper perspective to it. And that, you know...
Absolutely.
And that's so profound.
Yes, absolutely. Let's look at one of the best movies from last year, Hereditary, one of the greatest horror movies ever made. If you haven't watched it, please do take the opportunity to watch it. Ari Aster directed it. I believe he partially wrote the screenplay as well. It's an incredible story. It's terrifying. It's one of the most terrifying movies you'll ever see. But when you ask people who come out of the cinema after watching the movie what they remember, they're not going to talk about the terrifying sequences and say that, oh, that particular bit where this person was doing this crazy thing terrified me. No, what they're going to tell you is that what terrified them most about the movie was the slow descent into madness and dysfunction this family was experiencing. The terror, the horror elements are merely an aspect that rises out of those things. Horror is about existential problems that we tackle with issues in our family, death, the fears we have about work or about our children or our wives and husbands, you know, our worries when we hear about something in society and that terrifies us and almost for a second prevents us from going out, but then we have to because we've got to live. So you're exactly right. So there is a profound texture to a tale that has vampires and ghouls and ghosts and spirit manifestations.
That's, like I said, the depth is just something that blows my mind, right? And that's one of the things that engaging with people who are part of the performing arts or are part of the arts itself is what it has taught me. And that life and our perspectives are that they're just so diverse. And what each of these art forms or each of the ways that we consume this content is just different ways that we try to live it. And like, while it may be portrayed as a ghoul or a ghost or whatever, like you said, at the end of the day, it's our fears and our existential crisis and our insecurities that essentially that we are looking at.
Absolutely. And as you know, the thing is, as an audience member, you might not have to look at the technical aspects of it to be able to enjoy the story or do a deep structural analysis of the story to enjoy it. But, you know, you are understanding it at some level. when you walk out of that theater, and that's why you remember the good stories, whether it's an audiobook or a movie. I agree in terms of how you have detected that depth of analysis in creators, people who are engaged in performance arts. It's an essential skill to performing well, to be able to see the structure of storytelling really well, and to understand the subtext and the hidden messages in the art that you're delivering. It's very crucial to creating a great product in the end.
Absolutely. Talking to you reminded me of another episode that I'd done with a comedian and now podcaster Rupen Paul. And you know what? One of the things that he said was that, see, at the end of the day, all my jokes are about daily life, about how it's so mundane or how it's so meaningless or how it's so, it's just filled with all these ups and downs.
Yeah.
And we're just packaging it in a different way and offering you with context.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that transcends like across the different genres, right? Whether it's comedy or whether it's horror, it's so interesting to think about it in these ways and think of how all of these things are so connected.
Absolutely.
So that's about the genre, right? But why audio? Why not video?
I think the big thing with audio is that it's a perfect medium for crime and horror, because I think for those two genres, more than a lot of other genres, there is an element of the theater of the mind in operation that really colors the world. I mean, the thing with Indian noir is I always try to keep the stories, the language in the stories quite simple and the descriptions quite minimal, because what I'm trying to do is I just give the basic hints that the listener then takes and adds color to and builds in their mind. And it plays like a movie in their head. I mean, it plays like a movie in their head. Crime and horror is suddenly elevated. The terror, the tension, the suspense, it's all ratcheted up to a higher degree. I can't remember where this study was from, but I just recently read something wherein it said that listening to a story elicits a higher emotional state in you than reading. I totally believe that. I listen to a lot of audiobooks, and it is such a pleasurable experience, especially that theater of the mind aspect, to see that movie play in my head. And that's the reason why I chose audio. But the other long answer to that question is that this is the outcome of a long journey I've had as a writer. So I was a writer in the traditional sense of the word for 15 years. I had 100 plus publications. I won a lot of awards. I went through the traditional route, which is writing poetry and publishing it first and then winning awards for it, then moving on to short fiction, following that same pattern. Then once I published a lot and won awards, I moved to writing books, novel length books, that is. And by the time I hit that point, the publishing business had gone bust, in that it was the beginning of the death spiral of books. People were reading less books. Bookstores were dying, and it was impossible for a young writer like me to find a publishing house to guide me to become to have a career as a writer. So that was very disappointing. So I stopped writing, and I was disengaged from that creative writing practice for a long time. Then years later, I thought to myself, I need to do something very, creative to keep my mind entertained, to find a release for all the art and literature that I consume and perform in some way, to find some sort of gratification. And I was always very interested in poetry and reading poetry. And I used to always recite poetry when I was in university, when I was studying the poems. So I did a bachelor's in literature. In 2018, early 2018, I started this Twitter account where I started reciting contemporary poetry, and lo and behold, it became a big hit. I had a lot of wonderful feedback from a lot of poets, and it became popular to the extent that in 2018, there was over 1 million views to my readings on that channel. And once I had done that and I saw some positive feedback, I thought, maybe it's time to re-engage with my creative writing side. And I thought, you know, why not marry the two, the ability to narrate and the ability to write? And that's what's brought me to podcasting stories. But I had the 15 years of experience writing, which I brought into it. But I felt like I needed some specialist training. So I did some courses in voice acting. I did courses with Barbara Houseman in London and Patrick Frawley in the US. And most of this were done online. And that's the great thing about the internet. You can always reach out and learn these courses, and they're quite cheap. But, you know, I built my skill set in that space as well. So both those skills drawn in brings me to audio.
Wow. That's quite the journey.
Yeah, hopefully it wasn't a boring one.
It's a really interesting one. You know why? Because I want to know why you moved between mediums, right? So even within writing and within writing books, you've experimented quite a lot, because you spoke about short stories, you spoke about poetry, you spoke about novel-length books. And, you know, from there, so there's this, so what I see is a pattern of a very fluid mind.
Yeah. Look, that's really helped, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's a hallmark of creativity. I mean, you know, with the book-length works, I did a short story collection, then I wrote a novel, which would then go on to become His Night Begins, which is the crime show on Indian Noir. And then I also wrote a graphic novel with one of the best comic book artists in India, Vinay Brahmania, who is in Mumbai. We did a great job on that comics, and I'm very proud of it. So yes, being fluid has helped, not just in moving between genres and different mediums, but also exploring different kinds of stories. So that fluidity really helps in that sense.
Absolutely. So where can we get to read all these books, Nikesh? Can I buy them off of a store, or is it still a part of a blog, or is it there on Audible?
Yeah, look, to be honest with you, it's on my official website, www.nikeshmurali.net. But to be honest with you, I'd much rather now none of you buy the books, but actually listen to my voice as I'm reading it, because I just feel like it's really elevated the material. And I find this a lot with audiobooks. A lot of books that don't really seem to tend to work in print are suddenly elevated in Audible. A lot of people have read the books and they've really enjoyed it. His Night Begins, you know, I mean, I think there are so many His Night Begins fans who write in angrily if there has been a delay in the episode being posted, because they can't wait to find out what's happened to Gulab. And I think, you know, me doing different voices for the different characters and bringing in the pathos in my voice about the circumstance of this poor girl who's traveling through the sex trafficking chain, and also the almost schizophrenic portrayal of Virat Nariman as this man who is an awful hitman, but suddenly he's a loving father. You know, I think people really connect with that. So I strongly recommend you tune into Indian Noir and listen to those stories. But if you're keen, most of my written work is on my website.
So if there is a way that we can, that's one way to get a shortcut for what's going to be coming up next, or are you deviating a little bit?
It's definitely, but you know, the audio version is edited because it works differently when you're reading a narrative. It's not like typing it up on a page. You have to adapt it a bit for reading. And this is why I wouldn't advise, if there are writers out there who are listening to this and thinking, oh, I'm just going to podcast my book beginning to end, it's not always going to work. There is going to be a certain process of adaptation that happens when you do it for the audio format. It is a different format unto itself.
Got it. And speaking about formats and books and podcasts, right? What are your thoughts on creative artists who are just trapped in a particular medium and are unable to make like a transition?
Look, it's a very risky prospect, and it's something that I really struggled with as well, because when you have trained yourself for 15 years to write books And then you suddenly find there is no market for it. There's not enough readers. People just don't have the time. They're on Facebook and YouTube and Instagram and on Snapchat and consuming lots of TV. You know, suddenly you're just frozen and you really don't know how to move forward. So you have to find a way forward by looking at what else is available. How else can you express yourself? And it might be that writing fiction or writing poetry might not be the way ahead for you. Maybe there are other ways in which you can express your creativity. Maybe you are good at telling jokes, or you are good at singing or podcasting, or maybe there is a visual art form like or maybe you can like painting or dancing that you were really good at that you held yourself back from because you were so hell-bent on you know, sticking with a particular craft because you had this impression from the from your childhood that that's your identity, you know, or people told you you were very good at it. No, you know, if it's not working for you, don't stick with it. Try something else.
All of whatever we've spoken about reflects a lot of fluidity in the thought process and the mindset, right? And there is a constant reinvention of the self that's happening. So for people who are listening in, who are wondering, how do I go about reinventing myself? How do I go about looking at things with a fresh perspective? What is it that they can do?
I mean, the first thing is necessity is the mother of invention. The kind of society that we live in, the kind of times that we are in, people are needing to upskill themselves every few years to survive in the job market, to find new avenues to express themselves creatively. So it's a matter of you not having any choice in terms of reinvention. In terms of how to do it, it's just a matter of going out there and trying different things and really deep dive into a new area that you think you might have interest in. That's exactly what I do. For example, in terms of writing crime, I never wrote crime, but when I thought I would go in that direction, I completely immersed myself in reading true crime and books about criminal investigation and forensics and all that stuff. So in learning those things, I was able to move into that genre creatively. The same thing applies for a different art form that you might want to try. The same thing applies for people in a professional capacity too. So I started off with a master's in communications and I did communications work. And then a few years ago, I thought I need some legal skills. So I'm doing a law degree part-time now. That really helps with my policy work. So, you know, this reinvention is constantly happening, needs to happen. There is no hiding from it. Just go out there and deep dive and do it.
Got it. So what brought you here, right? You spoke about the transition from writing to audio, but do you want to just wind the clock back to like your childhood and how your experiences have made you the way you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think what would be useful for your listeners for this particular podcast would be to talk about my childhood with relation to storytelling. And I think the big thing for me was the fact that my parents were not particularly focused on making sure that I read books and was exposed to a lot of different kinds of storytelling that is appropriate for children. They didn't really focus much on that. One great thing that they did was they did not control what I consumed. So I was watching The Exorcist and Evil Dead and The Fly and Texas Chainsaw Massacre, all those movies when I was 6, 7, 8, and remember really enjoying those things. So there was no censorship in terms of what I was watching and reading. And so that really helped. So I was born in India. I lived in the Middle East for a few years because my father was in the United Nations. Then I came back to India to do my schooling. Was there all the way up to my bachelor's degree, all those years leading up to high school. You know, the same thing happened with my parents, wherein they were more than happy to. They couldn't provide me any guidance as to what I needed to read, But they always bought me like a library card and I was free to go and read whatever the hell I liked. So I was exposed to, you know, a lot of Nancy Drew and Hardy Boys, which I really enjoyed. Then I moved on to reading a lot of Stephen King and Dean Koontz and a lot of thriller writers like Robert Ludlum. And then I started reading some hardcore literary fiction, a lot of magic realist Latin American writing like from authors like Gabriel Garcia Marquez. And then I started, for my bachelor's degree, I went and did a bachelor's in literature. So I was exposed to a lot of Victorian literature, a lot of good quality American and British drama, plays, I should say. And also, you know, being in the atmosphere wherein there was constant talk about books and a love for books and storytelling. And then once I had finished up my bachelor's degree in Trivandrum in Kerala, I moved to Australia, and that's where I've been for the last 15 years. I did a dual master's, moved on to working for the government, and I now work in the private sector in a policy and communication space. And in my sort of Australian journey, in terms of what I was exposed to, I consumed a lot of literary fiction, especially from the American South. My favorite writer is Cormac McCarthy. People who have really strong writing skills that really make you question your own ability and skills as a writer. They're a good benchmark to measure yourself against. So I was able to test a lot of that with my own writing. And then, you know, just being in Australia, the great thing's been it's exposed me to so many different art forms, art and music and cinema and theatre. And that's all distilled and found its way into what you hear in Indian noir. Everything that I'm connected with and linked with in India, what I experienced in India, what I constantly read about in India, what happens in India, with all these artistic influences from living across multiple continents.
So it's fair to say that you're also continuing to consume all of this content because it informs the work that you do, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Got it. And any particular books that you're reading currently? Anything that you would recommend? Are you listening to?
Look, the thing with me is I've almost stopped reading books. I just don't get the time to read them. I find the act of reading really taxing, like going through the text in a book, 500, 600 pages of, 90,000 words plus. I prefer to listen to audiobooks, and I watch a lot of TV shows and watch a lot of movies. I am a movie buff. So this weekend I watched Captain Marvel, I've got so many movies lined up for this week. Lots of TV shows. I'm watching The Walking Dead at the moment. I subscribe to a lot of different TV show cable services. What I can recommend that I've just finished watching is True Detective season three, which was incredible. In terms of horror, South by Southwest, the movie festival's on at the moment. I hear Jordan Peele, who made the excellent Get Out, has made a brilliant follow-up in Us. Really looking forward to that. Ari Aster, who I talked about before, who made Hereditary, he's got a movie coming out called Midsommar. Really looking forward to that horror movie as well. In terms of books, I'm listening to a lot of crime fiction from the real doyens like Patricia Cornwell and Val McDermid and some of the newer writers to see what they're doing with the genre. So that's where I am at. But mostly I consume the sort of visual medium, which is where, the storytelling is really pushing the boundaries. And not just in terms of what visuals you see on screen, but also the structure of a story. So Indian noir is often structured like a movie screenplay. It follows the act structure of a movie and tries to do the external journey of accomplishing the character accomplishing something. If it's like defeating a ghost, or trying to solve a crime, that sort of thing. But also the emotional journey that a character has in a screenplay, which is resolving whatever emotional issues they have as they journey through the story.
Talk to me a little bit more on the emotional response that you talk about.
Look, this is a great question. And I think this might also serve as a good segue for us to listen to the story that I have exclusively written for your audience, because it has a lot to do with what you have asked about the emotional resonance of a story.
Uh-huh.
So every story, while there are all these external trappings, let's take the story of Prakash and his mother, which is the ongoing story on Indian Noir at the moment, as part of Fear FM. While there is this darkened monster that's haunting them, the story is really about a depressed man trying to deal with his feelings around having to look after his sick mother and how he's fighting his inner demons to take carriage of his responsibilities, which is a difficult thing, and how difficult that journey is. And that's what people will remember, and that's what will resonate with people when they finish listening to this season of Fear FM. And a similar sort of journey happens on a micro level in the story that I have recorded for you. For a good story to work, regardless of what the external trappings are, there has to be an emotional journey. And, you know, and I try to make sure that all my stories have that journey.
Got it. I think it's a great opportunity for my listeners to get a chance to see the amazing work that you are doing.
And, yeah, hopefully it'll give them a good flavor of what Indian Noir sounds like, what the storytelling is like. It's what you would call an extremely short story. So within 5 to 10 minutes, I have to tell a quick story with the beginning, middle, and end that will hopefully resonate with your audience, that'll emotionally move them, make them a bit fearful, make them think. That's what I'm hoping that it will do. But like you said, also give them a bit of context about the things that we have been talking about why I'm here on your show, my journey as a storyteller, what I am achieving in combining my writing skills with my voice acting skills, some of the things that we spoke so passionately about change and how a story is a good medium to talk about those things. So let's listen to the story now, and hopefully everyone's going to enjoy it. You are listening to a special bonus episode of Indian Noir. His wife first told him about the spectral visitors on the river when they were waiting for a maternity checkup in the small clinic in their village. "That's rubbish," Rajiv said to his wife, whose baby bump was getting more prominent by the day. "Yes, it is true," Rama insisted. "A river that is being used as a highway by the departed souls?" Rajiv scoffed at this idea. "I'm telling you, ever since the big explosion in the factory upriver, people have been seeing their loved ones who have passed on," Rama began, "cruising down the river for a jolly ride." Rajiv interrupted. Rama slapped her husband on his thigh. She then rubbed her belly and said, "See how your father laughs at me?" The doctor gave them the usual warnings. "You've had a few miscarriages, so be extra careful. Don't stress. No vigorous activity." They had never come this far in the pregnancy. "She can taste now, you know," Rama said to him, proudly looking on at the movement she could now see in her belly. They walked, holding hands, as they always did, to their little hut close to the river that Rama spoke of. Time
Time destroys everything. It steals everything dear to you, like a river eroding its banks. Rajiv and Rama wailed as they took the dead baby away from their hands. They hung on to each other, as the tragedy that befell their simple lives grew oppressive in the confines of the labor room. From there, it spread into their home. They forgot to eat, to sleep, to respond to the queries of their fellow human beings. One rainy night, Rama went missing for an hour. Panicked, Rajiv ran through the village and roused people sleeping in their homes and searched the fields, only to find her back at home, wet and cold and shivering. "Where were you?" he said to her angrily. "I saw her. I saw our baby girl down at the river." "Stop it. She was on the water's surface at first, then under it." "Stop it. She reached out to me. Touched me, Rajiv. Stop it." They didn't speak for days. She was missing again. This time, Rajiv went straight to the river. He found his wife knee-deep in the river, running her fingers lovingly on the surface of the water. "Rama?" he shouted to her. "Rama!" His wife waved him off, not even turning around to acknowledge his shouts of concern. He let her be. Let her indulge in her madness. Her visits to the river became frequent. Rajiv stopped hassling her over it. In the beginning, he would follow her to ensure she didn't harm herself. But he stopped doing that. Maybe she wanted to be alone with the sadness eating away at her soul. This was her way to cope. Just like how he sometimes fell to the ground crying, in the middle of the harvest in the fields, spit and tears and mud decorating his face like a mask of grief. A few weeks later, she drowned in her madness and sorrow. She drowned in the river, her lifeless body trapped in the roots of a tree. Rajiv didn't have the strength to see her body. He refused to look at her, even as he placed the last cake of cow dung on her face before the cremation. He wanted to remember her as the beautiful, glowing mother rubbing her belly, smiling at him, content, full of dreams for a family that was now ash and dust. But darkness finds a way to crush the spirit, and for Rajiv, there was no escaping the weight of his loss. It suffocated his waking hours and his sleepless nights. "My sister said she saw her dead husband on the river. I am telling you, there is truth to these stories." Rajiv listened in as his co-workers debated the paranormal occurrences on the river. That wretched body of water that had claimed his wife. Rajiv's blood boiled.
"I agree. There are too many people who have reported sightings for this to be a spooky campfire tale,"
another man offered. "Shut up," Rajiv said. He stood up and glared at them, rage etched on his face. "Your ignorance killed my wife. You people filled my wife's head with stupid stories, and see what that did to her." He stormed away. It didn't take long for him to see her ghostly form in the house, dressed in the same white sari and black blouse he cremated her in, her pale skin, wet and dimpled, as if she had just risen from a cold, watery grave. Strands of hair covering her face, head bent down. He always found her in the same pose, standing with her right hand pointing to the river. Every time. There could be no doubting her message. "Meet me by the river." For months he fought the need to give in to the temptation. What if he could see his wife and baby once again? What if she was in the fields, at home, on the road to the markets, pointing towards the river, always reminding him? He took up drinking to ease the pain. But the sweet spirit also dulled his reasoning, and one day he gave in to his desire. That night, she wasn't pointing to the river. She stood at the door, waiting for him. She walked behind him as he made his way to the river, her movement silent, ethereal. It made his hair stand on end. But the thought that he may see his loved ones again banished his fear. He reached the river. Watched it flow with no compassion for his plight. Nothing for an hour. Just the crickets and the sound of water and the vast cruel night sky that dwarfed him. Then just as he was about to leave, they arrived. Spectral, luminous forms skating on the water. There was no mistaking it. His wife and daughter. His daughter was somehow older, 3 or 4 years of age. They waved at him, smiled. Tears flooded his eyes. His heart was full again. The luminous forms pointed to the surface of the water. They urged him to join. So he did, waded into where they pointed. They continued to point. He looked down at the water. At first, he couldn't make out the shapes. Then it became clear. Eyes. The eyes of his daughter and wife looking at him from the depths. He dipped his head in. Tentacles lashed onto his hand and his feet and dragged him underneath. He thought there was solid ground underneath his feet, but he was being pulled to the inky black depths of some other watery domain, where the 4 human eyes transformed into 1,000,000 round eyes, glowing in the dark, illuminating the form of a great tentacled god. So terrifying and magnificent was its form, his spirit did not offer a fight, as water rushed in to fill the space in his lungs. The accident at the factory, the mighty explosion, did that do this? The dead spectral forms on the river, like the lure of an anglerfish. The questions and answers didn't matter anymore. She was here, the great elder god, the harvester of souls. Rajiv's sorrow, his life, his spirit, those things were inconsequential in the face of the expansive terror that watched him. He would have wept in joy if he could. But the great goddess does not rip your beating heart out from your chest with a loving touch. She roared in the darkness. Whether it was in pleasure or pain, Rajiv would never know.
Wow, that really, really, you know, gave me the shivers, Nikesh. the sound of the goddess screaming. How do you come up with that?
Look, there's lots of free YouTube clips, really. So, you know, that's how I get the sounds for Indian Noir. I go out there and I look for copyright free, royalty free audio clips. And some people have very kindly put it online. If you do a Google search, you can find lots of sound packs for different kinds of storytelling, not just horror. There's ones for crime. There's ones for horror. You know, it's all out there, the resources. From an emotional point of view of what you were saying, like I hope that story served well to terrify you, but you also, and I also hope you found it very moving about the plight of this man that loses everything. But his emotions, his sorrows, what's happened to him is inconsequential in the face of an existential horror, which is this great goddess. And so this, in relation to the story, I think this is perhaps the first Lovecraftian horror story by an author of Indian origin, because I've looked around and I've never found a Lovecraftian horror story by Indians, by an Indian author, especially one that's been committed to audio. Naga, do you know what a Lovecraftian horror story is?
I don't. Please do tell us.
Yeah, so H.P. Lovecraft was a famous horror author who wrote wrote these existentialist horror stories that we call Lovecraftian. It's a genre unto itself. And see, he wrote about these great elder gods who were born at the time the universe was created, who are imprisoned and sleeping somewhere in the vast cosmos. And they have these, you know, what's akin to devil worshippers here on Earth who are trying to bring them to the Earth. And Lovecraftian stories always told from the perspective of a human being who's enduring some kind of pain, going through some sort of challenge, who at the end of the story finds out how insignificant their pain is, how insignificant their journey or their troubles are compared to the merciless cold heart and the power of these giant gods. So, you know, there are lots of writers in the West who write in the genre, and there's some absolute masterpieces that have been produced in the horror genre, in that particular subset of storytelling. A story that I would really recommend to your listeners is Stephen King's N, which is a Lovecraftian horror story. You can actually watch it on YouTube. Marvel Comics did a fantastic job of adapting it as a visual comic, and it's a terrifying story, and that should give you a flavor of what Lovecraftian horror is. But what you just listened to was also a Lovecraftian horror tale. It's existential terror, existential horror. It's the best kind of horror there is, because it's just, you know, touches you in the most intimate of part of your heart, because these are horrors, these are terrifying things that are nestled deep within you, and you just avoid thinking about it as you go through your day-to-day life.
Right. I'll also include a link to the YouTube video on the show notes.
Yes, please.
Yep. And it's interesting that you say that, you know, the horror genre helps us get over our insecurities, and it helps us get through, you know, whatever difficulties it is that we're facing. And I remember in our previous conversations, you mentioned that, you know, a fear is healthy, and it forces us to fight it, and it forces it to take us to another level. Can you talk a little bit more on that?
Yeah, look, I'm just trying to think of a very good example here. I mean, if someone's really fearful of the thing that lives in their closet, once they, you know, switch off the light, I think a horror story, while people might think, oh, that's just going to ramp up the terror, it's a good way to process what the logic behind that fear is. What's driving you to have such a thought? And often a horror story will feature a character who will triumph over that fear and go and look in the closet and fight whatever's behind it, to be able to come out of the other end of the story being successful in conquering that fear And that's what I mean in terms of, you know, so the cathartic experience of experiencing horror and resolving those fears.
Got it. So I guess in that sense, it's akin to any other difficult conversation or difficult thing that we do, right? Because until we do it, in our minds, it's like the most fearful or the most craziest thing to do. For me, it was you know, talking to my fiance's dad and telling him that I'm marrying his daughter. But after I did it, you know, I felt like $1 million.
How did that go? I'm very curious. Tell me a bit about it.
So we've been dating for a couple of years now, and her dad had some reservations about us getting together. So he just wanted to have a sit down with me, and you know, he was just asking me, and you know, getting a reassurance that I'll be able to take care of his daughter, and you know, we're going to be able to figure things out, and that we know what we're doing, and that we know what we're getting into.
Yeah.
And once he got that, you know, he just figured out he already had the marriage dates on tap, and you know, he just told us, he gave us the options. The meeting with the parents happened, and now the marriage is scheduled in a couple of months.
So, yeah, congratulations.
Thank you so much. But that way, if you're connecting things, right, you can see these similarities and patterns so evidently.
Oh, totally. I mean, look at Jordan Peele's Get Out, one of the greatest horror movies ever made, one of the best movies made last year. You know, it's about an African-American man going to meet the white parents of his girlfriend for the first time. And, you know, the tension that comes with it, but also then it becomes a commentary on race that's very essential for the times. So there you go. There's an example of a horror story that actually links to something that you were saying. And it looks like in your case, you were able to work through the fear and argue your case and come out of it at the other end with a healthier relationship with your father-in-law, future father-in-law, and your fear resolved. There you go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. While we're on the topic of father-in-laws and wives, right? So one of the things that it looks like, right? If you're following your passion, in some cases, your passion may not monetize on the day one or in a couple of years, which means that you're burning the midnight oil, you're spending, you're doing a full-time job, and you're spending your weekends and your nights on your passion project. So I know that you're married and, you know, you have a wife and stuff. So how do you prioritize your time given this background?
I think the big thing with your passion, whatever it is, art, music, or dance, if you are really passionate about it, that means what you crave the most from engaging with it is an audience. And that's always been my interest. The money's been really secondary. I have a good career. You know, I can make money to pay my bills out of that. But what I wanted was to use my unique storytelling abilities to reach out to an audience that might be craving those stories but can't find it, and to win their trust and to entertain them and not bore them. That for me is very important, is something that is so satisfying, for which I will prioritize my time. I produce short episodes, not just because it might be a bit easier to edit it, but also because the, you know, a lot of work goes behind it. Like I spend a day writing the 1,000 words. I re-edit it a million times, and then I record it. So that's like a 3 to 4 day process. So that's why often there's only 2 episodes per week. The short episodes, because of the attention to detail. You know, the time that's spent doing that is amazing. I love it. I couldn't think of doing anything better with the parts of my spare time. But, you know, your family and your work and your friends, you can always find time to prioritize to do those things. And it's essential too. Like, you know, you can't be spending all your time with your art, because then the sources of inspiration dry out if you're constantly sitting in front of a computer or constantly just practicing whatever it is that you're doing. You need to get out there, go with your family, visit other people,
catch up with friends, go to a gallery, watch movies by yourself or with other people. All those things feed into your art. So while we are all time poor, we are all able to prioritize our time as well. So that's not a hassle. It shouldn't be a hassle for anyone. It can be challenging sometimes if you have children, especially, like, you know, I am pretty sure you've heard the story of J.K. Rowling, and she was a single mother. She didn't have a lot of time. And she would go to this cafe and, you know, just sit there and use their Wi-Fi and write, use of their power, because she didn't have any heating at home. You know, when someone's truly passionate about something, they find a way to prioritize and do what they love.
Absolutely. So how does one start an audio drama? So if there's someone who's trying, who's listening in, and they're like, man, this is so interesting and I want to do something similar. So what do you think that, what are the steps that they could take in order to get there?
Sure. The answer is not mysterious. A lot of people like to give mysterious answers to questions like this, you know, because the art world thrives on making complex assessments about, where, you know, art forms originate and how they're created and how they're delivered in the end. With audio dramas or audio fiction, the big thing is that you have to invest the time in learning different processes, I suppose, in terms of the narration side of the writing side of things, the narration side of things, and the production side of things. The first thing I would tell someone who's looking to produce a good audio fiction podcast or an audio drama podcast or record their own audiobook for sales on multiple platforms is to go and become a very good writer. That's the most essential thing. Go and spend a lot of time reading and experimenting and writing and publishing as well, you know, in magazines, because that will give you a good indication of whether your craft is of a publishable standard, if it is something that people would listen to and go, you know, this is professional, I've really enjoyed this. The next thing would be to invest and not just get out there and read what you've written, but listen to a lot of audio books and existing audio fiction and audio dramas that are well done. A good way to do that was A, go to Audible, but B, on Twitter, search hashtag audio fiction or audio drama. You will come across so many incredible audio drama podcasts. While I'm not recording Indian Noir, I'm always recording lines for a lot of audio dramas. I'm a professional voice actor. So there's plenty of shows that are coming up that I am in, if you follow me on social media, that you can listen to, which are directed and produced by some incredible talents that'll inspire you. But, you know, listen to all of those things. You know, find inspiration. Go and train yourself by doing improv theater or doing courses like the one I did with Patrick Frawley or Barbara Hausman or some of the many other theater drama teachers that are out there, because they have there's a method to engaging with the text that you're reading, and you absolutely must go through the training before you start reading. And finally, just understand how to record, you know, audio, how to edit it, how to add sound effects, how to deliver the whole thing as a package and present it to your podcasting platform so people can enjoy it. So there's all that you know, that's sort of the sequence in which you should learn and deliver the product. But while that looks like it's a huge task, it's so enjoyable. And the great thing about the internet is that, you know, it's democratized everything. You can access the best teachers for all these things, the best books, the best manuals, the best video courses for all of this. So, you know, the world is your oyster and you're going to come out of the other end as a shining pearl. So go forth and do it.
Got it. And I really like what you said, that the internet has democratized all of these things right now. And I think a lot of people just don't really understand or are able to figure out how to tap into these things. And, you know, your thoughts and your insights, I think, will go a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. Helping. Like, you know, Barbara Hausman, she teaches in a lot of great theater schools, like, this, you know, the schools that's produced Benedict Cumberbatch and a lot of great
British actors, you know, to be able to access her course online now is a miracle. And it's not that expensive. You know, we have access to all these amazing learning experiences now. Exactly as you said, it's an incredible time to be alive.
Yep. The last piece of this this question, right, is that we are always thinking about or wondering what people will say, what people will think. And that may be less of an issue for someone like you, who's always been putting out content, who's been in poetry, in short fiction and novels, or in reading poetry, right? But for someone who's doing it, or for someone who's starting to create content for the first time, it's a very real hesitation, or a very real apprehension that they have, that how are people going to think, what are they going to say, what kind of feedback they're going to get. So how does one build resilience, or how do you push yourself to kind of get the first bit of content out there? Or is it just like you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the big thing for let's talk about a specific example. So let's say someone listening to this falls in that category that you talked about, is, you know, just starting to put the content out. It's just starting to write and wants to deliver their product as an audio fiction podcast. I would say don't stop. That's not step one. I'd say write it first. And the other thing you should be doing, so write your story, try and improve it. While that's happening, go to a local improv theater club or a drama club or any of those things and explore how you are able to engage with text and deliver lines and see what people say to you about how you do those things. Rinse, repeat, get that experience under your belt, and then come back to your work and go, let me record some samples and see how it sounds like. Record them, send it around to people, see what feedback they give you. If they give you any suggestions, go back and work on it. You know, they might give you suggestions that are not useful. Ignore them if that doesn't work for you. But, you know, always listen to feedback, especially if people are repeatedly telling you about the same things, then that means something is definitely wrong. And just go and try again and then put your work out. But all, you know, and I'm pretty sure you'll find a great audience. I really feel like following those steps in sequence is crucial to having longevity in what you're doing. Because if you come out and just randomly put out material, then I just don't think you will get the kind of feedback that you want or the output that you want. And sometimes I feel bad saying this to artists. Like, for example, sometimes I get a lot of poets who reach out to me on Instagram who are putting the text out there, and they ask me, you know, like what I think about their work. And I'm always honest to them. I tell them, if it's not ready, I tell them, you know, you shouldn't be putting this up on Instagram. You should be working on this. You know, try and get it published through some traditional channels or some of the many e-zines that are out there. See if that works any good and that you've got an understanding of the craft. Then, when you feel you're ready, put it out there. Enjoy that journey. That's part of being an artist. That's not a bad thing. I mean, there's culturally this, and you know, the biggest killer, I think, have been these bullshit 30 writers under the age of 30, 20 writers under the age of 20. And you often read those articles and you find out, and you always find out that the 18-year-old genius's uncle works at Penguin Random House and was able to sneak in the manuscript and get it published. Forget those things. Forget those puff profile pieces. If you really want to be an artist, the important thing is that you're enjoying the hard work of being of learning your craft and then delivering it. And if it's really good, eventually you will find an audience. It might not be a huge audience. I mean, I don't know what the future of Indian Noir is. I think it'll always have a faithful listener base, but it'll never be as big as like a Joe Rogan show or a Jay Shetty show, because, you know, storytelling, it's got a small base of listeners, but that's okay. That's fine. I've got very discerning listeners, very vocal listeners, people who are very well-versed in storytelling traditions, who listen to a lot of great audiobooks and watch a lot of great TV shows and are wonderful human beings who support other artists, who celebrate art. You know, that's meaningful. And you will experience the same things. And rushing to get to that point is not going to help your cause. And it's not fair to your audience.
Yep. That's so true, right? Because what we see and what we are so conditioned towards is that we look at somebody's success. And the first thing that comes to our mind is that, I wish I was that guy. And everyone wants the reward. And nobody wants the hard work.
Rule number one, if you see a profile in a newspaper, go and do a Google search on who their uncle or auntie or mother or father or grandfather or grandmother is. And that'll give you the answer to the question. It's often, you know, I mean and sure, there are some people who are, you know, who worked really hard and found success, and good on them. And then there are people who, you know, get the reward through puff pieces. They all exist. That's part of it. You know, marketing really works. I'm not blaming those people. Neither should you. You should actually aspire to be those people. You know, try and network and get yourself out there. Do it. It's worth it. But don't beat yourself up because of it, is my message. Because, you know, you will take the time that you need to take. And that's okay.
Right. And the time aspect is so important, right? Because a lot of just how our attention spans are shrinking, our ability to concentrate is reducing, our proclivity towards wanting instant success or something instantly or in a few months or in a few years is something that's also seen widely with a lot of people, right? And it's so important to remember that you're only going to be successful if you're looking at things with a long-term lens. You're only going to be successful, or if you're looking at someone who's successful, that they've worked hard for like 10, 15, 20 years, and you're not comparing your day zero to their day 1,000 of their journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's things like meritocracy that I talked about. There's a matter of blind luck. There's also geographical location, which is very important. Like, you know, let's take, for example, the writing business. Someone who is in New York or London, close to the big publishing houses, they're going to have a better chance of finding agents and landing book deals versus some poor dude living in a small village in India. You know, there's the tyranny of being somewhere. So you got to realize that sometimes things are pitted against you. So what you do as an artist is not worry about that. If you are that person in a village somewhere who doesn't have access to it, find a way. Keep digging, and you will come up somewhere where there is an audience. And I think, like, you know, somewhere in rural India, someone's listening to this podcast and thinking, you know, maybe I should give up hope. No, you shouldn't give up on hope. India Noir is a classic example of why you shouldn't give up hope. You know, I had given up hope in terms of my writing career, and I've had a second wind because I'm able to combine my writing skills with my ability to voice act. Similarly, you will find a way to do it. You will find a way to do it well. But again, I reiterate my message, don't do a shoddy job. It's not fair to your audience. It's not fair to you. You know, don't get carried away by what you see in the media, but what other people are doing. Try and become the best version of yourself, not someone else. That's very important.
Yep, absolutely. And you've put it so beautifully, Nikesh. I don't really know if I have anything much to add there, because you've touched upon the willingness to work hard, having a long term perspective, making sure that the work that you do is the best that is possible.
Absolutely, and there's such a thing as, you know, trying to applying creativity to see where there is a niche where you can really shine. So again, you need to have the skill set in that area to do this. But, you know, I always had a very dark bend in my storytelling. So crime and horror are a good fit for me, storytelling wise. But the niche element of Indian noir is, you know, our creative industries don't do a good job of producing good works of horror, especially crime. I think there are some examples that are good, but where are the great Indian horror movies? I think Tumbad was exceptional. It is, I think, the greatest Indian horror movie ever made. So it's great to see examples like that, but there's just not enough. And there's not enough prestige horror movies coming out from India. same with crime. It's, you know, the quality's gone down a bit, I think. You know, I was just hoping that more great crime movies and stories and novels would have come out of India. So there was a bit of a gap there, and that's what Indian Noir is trying to fill. So, you know, it's apply your creativity to niche areas where there might be a bit of demand, so the audience comes to you as well. So, you know, use the marketing approach. Be smart about it, and you'll figure it out. If you are creative, if you have some kind of creative pursuit, that generally means that you are a very intelligent person. So a bit of application, a bit of thinking, a bit of research, a bit of networking, and you will find a way for an outlet for your art.
Yep. Very, very well said, Nikesh. Couldn't agree more. So as we wrap up, the episode, I just wanted to check and ask you how it feels to be on the Passion People podcast talking about your journey.
Look, it's been a very good experience. Like, as I said to you, I'm a huge fan of the podcast. So it's a bit surreal talking to you because I always hear you talking to other people. And I realize now that your voice is directed to me. And I'm answering these questions to you. And I've really enjoyed the journey we took in that, there was a bit of promotion to help your audience reach out to Indian Noir, which I am very appreciative of. And I hope a lot of your listeners will become the listeners of Indian Noir as well, especially if you love crime and horror. But mostly I like the fact that almost all of our conversation was directed to the thing that I think is the best part of your show, inspiring creative people to live a passionate life, to passionately chase their dreams, to find ways to express themselves, to find new avenues, new outlets, to break the chains, to break their inertia and move in new directions. That I have enjoyed. And just talking it out aloud has helped me think about some of the things I need to do as well. So just like a horror story is cathartic and helps you fight your fear, talking to you here has, you know, helped me talk through some of my creative challenges and what some of the strategies that I could adopt going into the future.
Absolutely, it's been a pleasure. It's been an absolute pleasure, Nikesh, and we will. I hope I get a chance to talk to you and meet you in person whenever you're in India or I'm in Australia sometime soon.
Absolutely. Why not? And I hope all of your listeners get to, engage with me if I ever come to India as well. I know the podcasting community in India is growing. There are lots of events on the horizon. So hopefully I will run into your audience and yourself there as well. But if not, you will always hear my voice every week saying, "This is Indian Noir," and proceeding from there to talk about the lives of someone who is experiencing something truly terrifying in their household, or a hitman going through the sex trade syndicate in India and butchering pretty much everyone in his way because he's on a revenge spree. So thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Nikesh.